Not recording. Oh.
Well, I'm really starting to like that intro music.
I know, like, it's kind of
authentically
great.
Liking it.
It's usually so much louder. Why is it so? Is this like, are we doing a mellow because we're going to talk about legal stuff today?
No, we tossed that idea. Okay.
We did?
Okay. Yeah, first of all, if people are listening and that would be interesting to you, please message me because I've offered up this topic several times and I think that is something that nobody talks about in Southwestern. The legal stuff because I have been going through some questionable contract talks with some other people, which I'm not ready to talk about yet and in due time. But all that to be said, I think it is important and nobody talks about it ever. So maybe really? Someday.
I wonder why.
You just register as an LLC and then file taxes as an S corp. And if you're smart, you have a business registered out of Wyoming because they have the most flexible legal framework to do all the stuff you need to do.
Look at that. All right. That's been a good episode. Thank you
guys
very much.
That topic is done, and then hire a lawyer.
Our actual topic for today is, now this is, I think we've done something similar to this one before, but it's worth revisiting because I don't think we ever really got everything out. And it's beginning with the end in mind whenever you go into business or start a business. And I think this is also pretty important, especially after my conversation with Patrick Dichter on the Ponytails podcast, where he is currently, like, his one of his main things right now is he'll go and look up companies who are ready to buy or people who are ready to exit. Maybe mom and pops who've had a company for 45 years and they're like, we're done. And so he goes in, checks out their books, makes sure they're the right fit, and then he invests and then grows them and like injects a bunch of like capital and coaching into it, and then they grow. And so that had me thinking, hey, we haven't really talked about that because everybody loves about, oh, you got to start a business. Or you should always start a business. You should start a business. You should start your own business. Oh, I run my own business. But then until when? Like, what's the end? And I don't think everybody has the same end goal. Some people want to be kind of like the mom and pop and just wait until they're done. And some people actually go, all right, we're going to do this for 10 years, make it be worth $1 million and then sell it. Some people have different options. So wanted to bring it up to the group and see what thoughts we had on this. So buckle up, everybody. I'm Andres Gamboa. I'm with Lee McCroskey, who is in Nashville, Tennessee. Alicia Huck in Denver. Will Metcher is in St. Louis. And Pat Roach is in Chicago. I'm in Portland, Oregon. Over to Lee so he could start proceedings.
Well, it's good to be here. Yeah, I don't know how many people that, if you're familiar with the Southwestern recruiting side of things, I can just think back to how many young people I interviewed in their 20-something, you know, the college age. And I was like, what are you going to do? And they're like, I want to run my own business and be a millionaire by the time I'm 30. I mean, I heard that all the time. And I'm like, that is fantastic. What's your plan? And they're like, I don't know. So that's as far as they'd thought it through. So just to kick things off, there may be two ways to look at this. I remember one of my mentors that I never met, Stephen Covey, who said that there's begin with the end in mind. That comes from him, but that there are two creations. All things are created twice. So the first creation is the mental creation, where you think things through, which all those young people I talked to, I just referenced, did not. And then the second creation is the physical, putting it, you know, making it happen. So like carpenters would say, measure twice, cut once. So if you make sure you've got the plan right, then you execute. So that might, if you guys want to, that might be a way to address this topic, is if you're thinking about starting a business, there's the first creation mentally. How do you do that? How much time do you invest in just thinking and planning and organizing and that? And then secondly, how do you launch? So we've got, I know Alicia would be, she could speak to that because you did it. Yeah. And then Pat, I know that you are ready and raring to go because you said, oh,
I'm ready.
I can talk about this. And then, See, because my issue was, and maybe before you guys launched in different directions, my issue was I stepped into business with Southwestern Advantage. In other words, all the marketing and the planning and the organizing for the most part was done. It was like a template. And then I walked into it as a 21-year-old. So everything was set up for me. I just had to go, you know, attitude and work hard and be coachable and all that stuff. So there wasn't, I agree it was running my own business, but all the logistical aspects wasn't part of it. So is that a way to approach this? Is like first creation, second creation? Because that's what I thought might make sense.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it. Now, Andres, you made it happen. With all the stuff you've launched here online, you could speak to at length.
Yeah. I'll go first just to talk from like a technical standpoint, and then people can add, like, because that's probably much all I've been learning, since I'm more newer to the game than some other folks here who not only work with business owners, but also, you know, run their own thing. For me, I think that when you talk about things happening twice, that's absolutely correct. The only thing I would add to that is that the thinking through process of it is not how we approach this, and we should have. So we just launched this podcast just on a whim, and we never thought it would get to the point where people would be pouring in financially and otherwise, and so that it would turn into, like Alicia said, make it an LLC and start. By the way, that's a limited liability company. If you don't know what that is, Google it. But I didn't, because we started on a whim, I didn't start with the end in mind. And to be honest with you, this is a topic that I'm a little curious to get some wisdom on myself, because as the show's growing and progressing, I'm thinking, okay, when does this, like, where does this stop? Like, what happens? Like, what's the other side of this? Do I interview alumni until I'm 60? Like, what do I do? You know, how does this work? Is this something I do? I don't know, to be honest with you. So, but I do know the following is, whenever that comes, and this is probably the only advice I'll give, technical stuff I learned, is I'm putting down the groundwork to make sure that it's an easy transition to whenever that is. So a couple of things. One, and against my very best efforts, I've tried not to make myself the image of the podcast very, very strongly, because what happens is, and this is maybe for you and your brand, everybody's talking about their brand now. One is, if you are the brand of the company that you're running, and then it's time to sell, and then somebody invests in it and buys it, and then you're gone, and you went, like, you basically took all the business because it's you and you're like the Oprah Winfrey show or something like that. Nobody else can do it like that, right? And so it would lose value. And actually, it's a terrible investment from a standpoint of it's about me. So I very intentionally, besides putting my face on recordings and audio, I try to avoid any of my face on our social media, on our newsletter. There's like a little about me section on our website. I've tried to bring other people, sharp people who can maybe serve and talk to the community that we're building besides myself. So that way it's like more balanced and it's more open. Another reason why I didn't want to just do this by myself, and I invited Lee to help me host this, because I don't want it to be about myself. So that's the first thing I was like careful with. And the second thing I've been really careful with is our numbers. And just trying to be careful of not spending dumb money on dumb things that I don't need. Every decision that I've done to spend money on for investing and growing this thing has been specifically to A, help us look and sound more professional, or B, help with the management of this whole thing. So, and then I have that. I've done the accounting side of things very, very well. And I think so that way, if someone ever wants to buy this, if it's worth any money in the future, I can be like, look, from the past, this is how it's been, and this is what we're up to. But those are the two technical things that I would give, is don't make yourself the name of the brand, or like the face of the brand, unless you're Michael Jordan, not to bring that up again. And keep your numbers tidy.
Trump. There's a...
yeah, like no. That. Like, yeah, don't do that.
I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah, or even like somebody, like, I just think of other podcasts. I think of like Joe Rogan, for example. That's probably the most popular podcast in the world right now.
It is,
and it's like, if he ever wants to stop, the show can't go on without him. He makes it. It's literally called the Joe Rogan Experience. for, you know what I'm saying? And it works the same way with like other businesses too, where it's like this is the person and then they're gone and then it's over.
Right.
So those are my two cents.
Isn't that kind of a bit from Jim Collins's book, Good to Great? He talks about when they study the greatest corporations, one of their key criteria was that they had this growth pattern that went beyond just one individual CEO. There had to have been multiple CEOs that were following out this model for it to be truly considered in the, you know, greatest companies. But I agree. There's this training company that helped me get started in real estate called Buffini and Company. The guy's name is Brian Buffini, amazing trainer. Awesome. I was just at an event last week in Orlando. And from day one, I've thought to myself, what's he ever going to do when he doesn't want to do this anymore? The company will cease to exist.
Right.
They are going to have to recreate themselves, rebrand themselves, because they do a lot of, you know, coaching of realtors and whatnot. But it's all about him. You can't do anything with that beyond him.
Yeah, that's a bummer. True.
Good point.
He did not start with the end in mind, or he'll have to rebrand Running Still for a few years and then sell it. Maybe.
Right.
And that's the same thing for like Zig Ziglar, you know, any of those people that created those. It's like he is the face. Now, I think Tom Ziegler's his name, his son is still trying to keep that going. But to your point, like the face.
Nobody wants to hear Tom Ziegler. What's Tom Ziegler? We want Zig Ziglar.
No one wants that. Or John Maxwell.
Yeah.
He's rebranding. Right. He wrote the Bible, evidently.
So, egomaniac.
He's God?
Yeah. Okay. Point made. That's a good point.
Those are my two things.
Well, Andres, though, tell us, though, just if you can briefly, what were your first steps when you had that little spark where what was your first creation? Or you just said you just started doing and then it evolved?
Well, okay, that's a good question. Like, I think you're asking, like, when I knew it went from, like, whoa, this is just something we do on Tuesday nights with alumni to let's make this a business.
Did you sit down and...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We went, so we were just doing the thing, and then one summer we got Pat Roach. There was two big guests back to back. It was, we were going all the way through April, I think we ended with Yvette, and then we took a break, and then Pat, and we were talking, and then we got Pat on the show. We recorded that one episode, and then in August again, one more time, we had Dave Rosen. So back to back, it was Pat Roach and then Dave Rosen. And then by the time we stopped again for a little bit. And we looked at just like the numbers, and I'm like, holy cow, people are watching. There's people watching this. I mean, it's not Joe Rogan numbers, but it was enough that I went, And then Anchor, which is where we run our our podcast platform, they messaged us and said, hey, there's like four companies. We got an email. It's like, there's four companies that want to sponsor you. And it was like, some of them were like $15 to say two words or something, or mention your brand. But some of them were like, hey, it's like, there's money in this. And I said, I mean, I can't feed my dogs with this, but if other people are seeing value in this and they don't know our audience and the value that our audience holds, then maybe alumni would. And literally I went back to Pat and Julio Hernandez and I said, hey, would you be interested in having this many people on a regular basis where we talk about your business for a little bit during our show? And Pat, and they were both like, yeah, but they were more supportive. I don't know. I don't want to speak for Pat. I don't know how much he believed in me, but I mean, I sure some to give us some money, but that when I found out that they said yes, I said, oh, we can do this. We can make this a business. And within 2 weeks I had the LLC and then boom. Yeah.
Wow.
It was like, cause I'm like, oh, if we can find two guys, that means we can find more ponies. So, nice. And Pat, you know, we can probably find more people to believe in us.
Pat, you're a pony.
I had no idea. Yeah, but
nice.
I'm here for you.
I'm headed to the glue factory, so I'm just trying to get whatever I
can. We'll do the giraffe walk again. Those are my favorite things. Like, now, not being a horse and Will doing the giraffe thing. So good.
Yeah.
That's how I knew. To answer your question.
It's just like people started believing in us. The one person that probably has the most insight on the idea of building a business and like scaling it, because that's what you do for other companies, your insight is doing the giraffe.
Yeah, Alicia, you're trying to deflect. All right, tell us, Alicia, tell us your, I mean, we know
everything you know.
You've given us a sketch, and mostly grounded in all the mistakes you made, you know, and, you know, so that was helpful to your maturity. But what about this first creation, second creation? Was it clean like that, or how'd it go?
Mine was pretty clean like that in a lot of ways. So I'd been off the book field for a few years trying to sort out some family stuff. And I got a panicked phone call from Virgie Sanford one year, who's down in Texas recruiting pretty much by herself, right? And she didn't have a big enough group to really justify a lot of investment. She asked me if I'd come down and do their spring production meeting. And so I did, and it was great for me because I got to feel like me again. Like I got to coach people. I was in my, like, you know, if we sent you back to a spring production meeting, all of us know how to crush that and have really good one-on-one PC. So it was really good for me. And then the next year she asked me to come back and do it again. And there was a woman, a book chick named Linda Schwader Smith. And I told her this story. She's brilliant, right? But I watched her giving a goal setting workshop that she gave. And somebody told me she charged $5,000 for it. And I was an arrogant little snot. And I was like, if she can get five, I can get 10.
Yeah.
So like, I think I should be a consultant, you guys. I think I should do that. And I wasn't quite sure how any of that would work. I ended up working with Mike Weber in the Leadership Institute for a couple of years. That wasn't a happy marriage of professionals for a bunch of different reasons, most of which were my fault. And but then there just came a day where, so I guess my phase one, picturing it, Lee, to your point, was really long, like a year and a half. And I just kept thinking, I can do this. I could do that, or maybe even two. I don't remember how long I was with the Leadership Institute. But finally, when it was clear that that wasn't going to work, it's like, I think I should just do that, which is a really stupid way to start a business. Because I had no money, no savings. I'd never done anything but door-to-door sales. So I didn't know how to call on business customers or how that was supposed to work. And my old sales manager, Jeff Hahn, kept telling me I had to cold call, and like over my dead bleeding body.
Prospecting.
In a million years, not for any amount of money, I'd rather starve. And so I started a business like the dumbest way that you could possibly start a business. And it was really hard for a long time, just trying to figure out what my niche was, who I should be serving. And so, you know, I have a couple of things that I would say to people. If you're thinking about it, I would definitely advise to build a nice steady, like a year, at least 6 months of savings before you jump in, depending on what kind of business you're in and how much overhead there is. I also think that we underestimate how great it is to work for someone else. Like, you know, I remember one time I ran into a friend at the grocery store and he worked for Comcast, right? Big, huge company. And he's like, he said, what are you doing? I said, I don't know. I'm pretty much done. I'm just running an errand and then I'm done for the day. And it was like, you know, 11:30. He's like, you entrepreneurs, you guys are so lazy. You never have to do anything. I got a 9-to-5. And I was there to cash in a bucket of change so I could put gas in my car. I just kept thinking, yes, awesome. It's so glamorous. I'm so cool and everybody wants to be me, right?
That's awesome.
So, you know, I'm also very stubborn and I just wasn't going to give up until I figured it out. But there were a lot of painful years where I didn't have it figured out. And, you know, I think a couple of things. I think don't underestimate how great it is to work for another company if it's the right company. And you can, if you're smart, you can have huge financial rewards from that. There are all kinds of ways that you can do that. If you're with good people, that matters. And even if you don't work for yourself, you're still managing your own career. Like every time somebody's like getting out their resume to go job hunting, I'm like, I'm always job hunting. So my life is really easy because I never stop job hunting. So I never am like surprised by the need to do it some more. And no matter what you think it's going to look like, it's going to change, right?
Yes.
Netflix was doing one thing and then they ended up doing another thing, right? I mean, for me, I make all these huge elaborate plans and it never, ever, ever has gone that way. And I work really hard in this direction and then a bunch of opportunities pop up over here. So I go over there and make some money. And so there's always a pivot. So I think you can do a lot of planning, you should, and it really depends on how much overhead you're gonna have, right? Like maybe you need investors going in, you don't need that, right? I picked a business model where it's mostly me. So whatever, sorry, I think that was mine, even though I shut it off. So I don't hate myself. yeah, so, and then with other people, what I've seen is the very best way to start a business is to inherit one without any taxes or problems with a lot of cash on the bank.
Yeah.
Like if you can do it that way, that's really the best way to start a business.
Sure.
Well, can I correct something that you said?
Yeah.
Oh, mansplain.
There we go.
No. This is just assuming I'm going to do that. I love it. No, this goes back to what our previous conversation two times ago was, just like affirmations. One thing that you said that I want to call out, you said you did a really like dumb way of starting a business or starting your business. I'm going to correct that. Like the most important thing that you said was you started a business. You started it. And the idea,
I'm confused.
She took action.
She took action.
Yeah.
There's a,
I would agree with.
There's a organization. Can I go? Or Andres?
Sure, well, yeah.
Can I go?
Can I say words?
Sick of listening. I want to go.
I got to go. So hurry up.
It's just, I feel like you guys can talk about like the logical side and like the technical stuff. And I can kind of swoop in on the emotional side of things. There's a book called Ready, Fire, Aim.
Yeah.
And I think it's so prevalent in starting businesses. I remember back in college, I was a part of this organization that was called Startup Weekend. And the whole premise of Startup Weekend is you have literally the weekend to go from this isn't fully an idea to this is a business. Wow. And we've started to create and do something.
That's cool.
And there's two organizations that came out of that. It was back in 2011. I just saw a friend started working for this company called Zapier. That was one of the companies in 2011 that started that weekend. And I was Googling it. They're currently valued at $5
billion. Jeez.
It was that one. And there was another company called Equipment Share. And like the group that I was in, we were still working on like, what's our logo look like? Like what's going to be our like proof? And like, there was just all this stuff that, you know, we got to have this really cool website. Like these guys were like, in the back, just like slamming like energy drinks and coding and just like getting after it and like building the actual product itself. And so when they presented the one that I was in, it was like, it was called College Beer Review. And so we did have like this pretty website where it was like two dumb college guys, like, hey, we're going to sample beers. And at the time it was a cool thing. And we actually like kind of made it to the finals, but the companies that were actual real companies that are now companies,
yeah,
the reason that they won and the reason that they're successful now is because they actually got after, hey, we're going to start this, because the quicker you can start it, the quicker you can fail and pivot and figure out what you need to do. And to Alicia's point, when you're starting faster, then you're able to hit gold quicker and actually start bringing in revenue compared to like, we need to have this perfect X.
Right.
It's just starting. It's getting after it.
And to tag on to that, I would say, you know, we used to say on the book field that the person who can teach you the most about selling is Mrs. Jones. Like if you just go hang out with her as long as you can, as often as you can, you meet as many of her as you possibly can. And I see the same thing. People get really twisted up about logos and pretty stuff. No, who are your customers? How much did you sell them? Right? Like if you have that, you can figure everything else out, but you've got to figure out a way to get customers in the door. And if you don't have that, what are you doing? But it's not glamorous. Everybody thinks it's going to be glamorous, right? I get to set my own hours. The flip side of it is you're working all weekend for like 3 years, or you're terrified you're going to lose your house. Like it's everything is an upside and a downside. So don't put on, you know, goggles and be like, it'll be amazing, because parts of it will, and a lot of it
will. And you know, that comes back to the whole notion of comparing yourself to others. You're comparing your insides and the stress you're feeling with other people's outsides. So like your friend who came up and said, oh, you entrepreneurs, you don't have, you know, he was just imagining what your life was like, and you were carrying a bucket of change to cash in. I mean, you know, can't do that. That also made me think of another topic, which we may not want to veer off into, but the tyranny of the urgent. Have you guys heard of that? Just there was a little pamphlet I got when I was at Southwestern, and I shared with some of my quadrant one urgency driven fellow workers, and it was getting caught up in activity versus results. You know, there's results generating activity, and there's just being frantic and busy. So I can see that being sort of a sidebar to this conversation. But
is this one of these books?
A whole episode all on its own.
Yeah, I think that's good. I'm gonna write. We're just gonna do that next week.
Again, Lee, was this like a book that was written in like 1786 or something like that? With
what kind of?
All of your books
this thick.
Stop making fun of Lee's books. The Maxwell Bible is clearly new, but I want to go back to a point that Will made, because
here's something new. Brené Brown, how about that?
Oh, Brené.
But to Will's point, right? Like, the thing you do is get started. The thing I can definitely say that not everybody knows, that all the entrepreneurs I work with are surprised when I say it to them, and that we really should be saying it more. Everyone is making it up.
Yes.
It's not like they just know.
Yes.
They're all making it up. They're all solving whatever. There's a pandemic and now I got to figure this out. It's nobody has it handled. $100 million, $400 million. They're all making it up. Some of them with more confidence, some with more intelligence.
Yes.
Everybody's making it up. So how do you do it?
Ring your bell.
Oh, thank you.
Ring your bell. There.
Oh. Okay, maybe put it like a further back from your mic. There you go.
I'll take it here on bell.
Listen, if you're gonna ring a bell, ring it big.
Yeah.
Hey, okay, I got something to say to this, but I want to hear what Paz to say, because Paz hasn't spoken yet. But I do want to go back to that. Everybody's making it up. Can you believe?
What's interesting about, I started Southwestern Real Estate, but it isn't as strict of an entrepreneurial endeavor as other people starting businesses like Alicia's done, Andres, what you're doing. So the deal with mine, if some of you guys have heard the story, it was kind of, I was leaving Southwestern and Henry was like, what are you gonna do? And I said, flip houses. And he goes, we'd like to have a real estate company. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he was like, well, you know, all these kids go on and sell tons of houses and, you know, they're great realtors all over the country. We should have that. I'm like, that's not what I was talking about. But anyway.
That's an example of someone making it up.
He's like, well, you said real estate, so why not? Okay. Now, the beauty of the thing was, is that as I went broke over that next year and I saw the realtor getting paid every time, I was like, wow, there is something to that job that I should probably figure out. And it's what Henry wanted to do. And then when I was really totally destitute, I called him and I said, I think I would be interested in doing that. and he said, okay, great, let's go. We'll just pay you what you were getting paid as a sales manager. And then you can learn how to do. He's like, we don't know what we're doing. You don't know. I don't know. But I bet we'll figure it out. And so we'll just pay you until your commissions exceed what your pay is. And then we'll switch you over to commission. Then you can be like a normal person. So in starting the business, I had a paycheck coming in twice a month. That's different. And what I also knew is that that saved me at a time where I was like, man, that is a complete bailout of a total financial train wreck. And I'll never forget that, having come along at a time where I absolutely was on dire straits. And I can't emphasize that more clearly than that. That is key to the whole thing. Because I also knew someday this thing's probably, if we do it right and figure things out, and if they're going to pay me until I do, well, you know, it might take a couple of years, but we'll get there. I also knew that someday if we get there, I'm not going to keep all the money. They're going to own the company And they're going to be entitled to a certain portion of profit that I just won't, I'll see it. And I'll think at that time, if this was Pat Roach Real Estate, that would all go in my pocket. And I am agreeing up front that when that day comes, I'm good with it. I'm good with it for a variety of reasons, for the bailout that it provided me. But here's ultimately what the other thing was. I saw more value in partnering with them because of the access to future talent than I would have wanted just starting a real estate company. And so for me to have a small piece of a very large pie that probably never would have existed if it weren't for that connection, I believe in that. And so that's why all of that works out well. Now, in starting a business, I found there were two things that I kind of had to figure out how to do. One was I had to learn how to be a realtor, right? So the sales process, how do you actually do that part? Because if that's what everybody in this company is going to do, I got to figure out a track to run on. So I had to learn that. But then alongside that, and it was easy when it was a one person company, right? Because it's like, well, hypothetically, if we had other realtors, well, how would we want the company to work? So I had to interview all these different brokers and things, learn all their stuff, how they do it. So I had to kind of go, well, when we eventually add people, how do we structure the business part of it? How do you scale it? So those are two different projects for starting a company. To be honest with you, learning how to do the realtor part, that's where that was already prepackaged. You know, this Brian Buffini guy does this great job of telling you how to do it. So I just did. So that was a prepackage. Here's the best practices for doing real estate. Of all the 50 ways you could do it, we like this model. I like that model. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to teach anybody who comes behind me how to do this. In fact, I'm going to send them to all of Brian's seminars, and I'm going to encourage them to get coaches with Southwestern Coach Consulting or Buffini or whoever, but get a coach. Makes my job easier, makes their career better. Okay. So the sales part of it got figured out pretty quickly. The business part of it, here's what I found to be very compelling and interesting and intriguing. And it was like, it really captured my attention. First thing I would say is there are different pieces of building a business that we initially started off. And again, Henry gave me, we would discuss regularly, but there were a lot of things where he's just like, tell me what you got. What have you learned? What have you figured out? And occasionally he'd say, oh, you know what we did with this other business is we did A, B, and C. And how would that look if we did that? And it's like, oh, that could work. A lot of times what Henry would say is, oh, okay, well, let's see here. If we were selling books, how would we address that issue? And I'm not kidding. That was the answer to the problem more than you would have guessed. Or that question, reframing it, showed us how to go. So that was pretty impressive, actually.
So the answer to your problems lay behind the next door is what you're saying.
Kind of. I'm going to give you two examples. One is, let's say when we had to address the issue of how does the pay plan work? Okay. As many brokerages that are out there, there's probably that many different pay plans. How are we going to do ours? Coming in initially, I thought, well, if we want to just attract a ton of talent and get a bunch of agents in here, why don't we just do the obvious and undercut the market? And then financially, economically speaking, we're the place to go. Okay. And that seemed to make sense for somebody who's trying out a pay plan till you realize, man, this really doesn't turn out to make anybody a whole lot of money at all until you get like thousands of people working for you. But it also changes the culture. And that's where I think the key for decision making ultimately comes back to what kind of culture do you want to create? Because all the decisions that come after that are going to be a contributing factor to the culture that the thing becomes.
Yes.
And if you do an undercut the market type of pay plan, guess who you attract? The people that are only concerned about their bottom line, and they don't want anything from you. They don't want any connection with anybody else. They just want the money. And that will impact the culture. We ended up going the other way where we're like, what do we want? We actually want a company. This is me thinking, what do I want? I want to be surrounded by a bunch of people who are building awesome businesses. And if I was getting recruited into this company and they said, we want you to be top 1%. We want you to be what just crush it in real estate. I'd be like, can you tell me how to do that? Can you teach me? Show me the way. That's kind of what I want. We both want the same thing. A pay plan that's graduated to incentivize top tier production is not going to undercut the market at all. It's not even going to be the best deal in town. But if it creates a culture where management, the company, the agent themselves are all pointed in the right direction to sell a ton of houses, everybody's on the same team. That impacts the culture. And I'll just say one other quick word about that. I have other notes, but even when you do your incentives, that impacts culture, right? If you say, hey, salespeople like incentives, here's a prize. You could win $500 if you just do this. And you get some people to do it, but that in itself is impacting the culture. And that's why we were like, you know, we should do for an incentive, we should do Sizzler. Because why not? Like, what's so great about Sizzler is it forces people within the company to want something super bad that they go on vacation together and hang out together and enjoy each other's company together. And it's like, you know, we're not doing the crap hotels, you know, like Advantage does, because we're not college students, right? We're doing really nice trips. And the cool thing about it is I have seen people go, I don't know, you know, like I had an outsider guy that worked at a different brokerage before us, and he was like, I don't see why this is such a big deal. I mean, to be honest with you, I can take as many vacations as I want, and I go to some pretty nice places. His first Sizzler, he was like, now I get it. This is an amazing resort, and I'm hanging out with people that I am loving every conversation. Like, that impacts the culture. So
I remember my first Sizzler.
Hey, I got to tell you, I was on the first Sizzler, and we stayed
the very first?
I believe so. And I'm not making this up. I'll make it quick.
I didn't see that coming.
Wow. I thought they always had been.
You're being serious. You were on the first Sizzler.
I don't remember where we stayed in all the subsequent Sizzlers, but we stayed at the first one at a place called, it was a youth hostel called La Crea, which means, I think, the crap in Spanish. But the Crea, we were staying in bunks. There was like half the size were the men, half side were the women. We stayed in a large area of bunk beds that had mostly drunken British Marines that came in at night.
Oh my.
And there were very few screens, you know, and mosquitoes would come in at night. So we bought the little mosquito
light, but it
burned a circle anyway. And you'd put that above your head where you're trying to sleep to drive off the insects.
Sizzler.
Point well made.
We had no shower curtain. Didn't have pillows on the beds because they finished the resort that had been booked. I don't remember it mattering at all to
anyone. No, it didn't. So, Pat,
was there beer in the shower?
On a side note, we are continuing Bizzler this year. At some point in October, more details to come as things have changed. Come to that. It's not the two experiences that people have described.
Yeah, it's in La Crea.
It's in La Crea, no pillows.
Okay.
But one thing real quick to Pat's point. We talk a lot about how you ran your own business at Southwestern, and I just got to say, what a load of bullshit. Like, it's not. It's just not. You're told what to, the fact that you can even file as an independent contractor is kind of a joke. Like, the truth is, if you think that you already have, what you've done is you've run you. And you've either become good at that or you are not good at that. But yeah. Running your own business is so many other questions to answer. And there are no, there are a whole bunch of really good answers. So it's 1,000 choices that you have to make, right? Like, I was laughing because Pat's like, well, first I had to learn how to sell real estate. Right? And like, that seems like such a either giving.
I had to do what the business is creating. I had to learn that.
Right? Like, I should probably ask someone how that works, right? Handle on that, right? I remember calling people like, how do you do contracts? Can you send me what? Yeah. When they say they want strategic planning,
what legal stuff.
How do you work
the legal stuff? All right,
get out of here with your legal stuff.
I'm out.
Right?
I'm starting to like that.
Okay. So
sending you to Judge Judy.
Get accounting help. Get financial help. Do not neglect your books. The more complex your business is, the earlier you need all that help, and the more valuable it will be. 1,000,000,000%. You will never regret the money you spend on people to keep your books clean. But yeah.
Right.
So just remember, you're good at running you. That's not the same as running a business.
Right.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So it goes back to questions, basic questions. Like what, you know, Pat had to figure out, what am I trying to accomplish? So, and that makes you think, you know, product, service, you got to organize all the elements like R&D, operations, personnel, recruiting, facilities, if it gets that complex. But
R&D means research and development, campers.
Oh, yeah. That's
true. Oh, yeah. Put that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But most business failures that I'm familiar with occur in the first creation. Not that, because it hasn't been thought through. You know, they don't capitalize it well. They misunderstand the market completely, or
they have a 50-50 partnership, which is the kiss of death. It's the doom signal. It Amen. Never works ever.
Okay. Good. Yeah. So that's one question, is what am I trying to accomplish? So Pat had to think through that, and he did. Who am I going to work with? So the 50-50 split, not a great idea as far as owners. Well, when was this thing launch is a big question. I'm just thinking of the who, what, when, where. How will we do business is obviously massive. How will we change? How are we going to remain nimble in a market that is in high flux? And then to Pat's point, that I think culture is so huge. And why are we in this business? One thing, although we make fun of Southwestern Advantage.
We do?
Yeah, you do. You do all the time. You're just sucking off the mother teat and look.
What's Southwestern?
Yeah, Pat really double dips quite boldly.
Isn't that the airline?
Yeah. Well, nice. The whole notion of why we're in business, that is so key. And I think that the culture was at once like a two-edged sword. It was super strong at Southwestern Advantage because we had 150 years. And that also turned us into Jurassic Park at times. I was, you know, yelling at the directors like, what are we doing here? We got to change. Look at the horizon. What's coming? You know?
Yeah.
And that was, anyway, different story. But the culture was strong and it had its strengths and weaknesses. So that would be another topic.
Well, and the thing is, like, I think, and this is part of the topic and part of the reason why none of us really, like, when I say begin with the end in mind, like Southwestern has or believes it has no end, which if it doesn't, hurrah, if it makes it 250 years, great. If it doesn't, and they transition into selling whatever, right? But they're good at adapting, and I think that's what we got taught more than anything. Yeah. But what that brings us back to the point that Alicia made, which is we're all making it up. And okay. I'm going to get on a rant really quick.
Whoa.
Okay. Number one, this is why I get so frustrated with like people like Tony Robbins. And I'm not saying there's no value in that or anything like that, but it's like, dude, this works for you based on who you are and who you were at the time with the context of your life at that place. Now, some people might go to that conference and pay, you know, $650 outrageous dollars to watch him talk about this, and it might work and it might change your life and they might get motivation, and now that's great. And if it's an arena of 20,000 people, that's phenomenal. But you would expect for $650 that all 20,000 people would come out of that place changed, and then those people would go make the changes in the world, and just 20,000 people doing Tony Robbins things well would change the world forever as we know it or whatever. But
that program costs $50,000, just so you know.
whatever. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm like $650 is
that's crazy. Now that, the reason to me that that's crazy is you could take that money and do what Will said is instead of spending that money, invest it into a business, start from scratch and make it up like he did and is still doing.
No, you should always pay the coaches, Andres. What are you doing right
hang
now?
Hang on. That's different. What you guys do, and this is a good point. This is a key difference. What Tony Robbins does is inspire, but what you guys do is coach, which is a whole different thing. One of the reasons that you and Will are so good at your job is because we in Southwestern, like you said, didn't run our own business. We managed our emotions. That's what we learned to do. We managed, right? And so what happens is you become a leader in Southwestern and you have to manage yours and other people's. And really that's what coaching is you go, hey, your skill is this and shit's going to happen to throw you off, but you got to keep the main thing. And you help people recognize that perspective and keep going, which is different than what Tony Robbins does. Tony Robbins gives you emotion and I'm going to go kick ass and next week you're back to nothing. But all that to be said is he was making it up. He's still making it up and you're making it up and I'm making it up and we're all making it up. And that's okay. Pat made it up and it's probably still making it up. But the whole big difference to people who, yeah, like
Anthony Robbins.
Right. Get it right. Okay, Andre, I'm sorry.
No,
I was good. Always wondering where Lee got his hairdo from. Now I know.
I love it. No, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, based on what you guys are saying, and this to finish my rant, is it, I think what ends up happening is there's a bit of what Will said, which is action. And then there's a bit of like what you guys do, which is you need action and a coach. With those two things, you're pretty, I mean, Henry was your coach for a long time and he didn't know about real estate. He doesn't have to know. He just knew how to manage you and coach you well to use your skills to help you give perspective. Well, that's perfect. That's exactly what you needed at the time. And all that to say is people get so involved and they don't really understand the business that they're in, because they think that it has to be so rigid. And so like you are not in the real estate business, Pat. That's a byproduct of what you do. You're in the building strong company culture business. You do a really good job of that. And it happens that you just sell houses, right? We are in the transparency business. We're in the people empowering people and their voice business. It just happens that they come in and talk about how they really felt about selling books door to door for 80 hours a week, right? The key thing is understanding the business that you're really in, because then the other shit comes after, right? The houses will sell if you have the right culture, and the money will come if you sell the right houses. But it all starts, like you said, in your mind, it was, we're going to build culture. That's what you built, and that's the company you built. You built a really solid. For us, it's, like I said, transparency. I can't speak for Alicia and Will, but that's my, in my head, it's like, keep the main thing, and understand what really you're doing, and that'll help more than anything besides action and coaching. By the way, if you need coaching, Will Metro and Alicia Hook. If you need a house, Pat Roach.
Alicia, are you going to drop
if you need a book, call Lee.
Just a little tiny.
A little bit.
The other thing that nobody ever told me about running your own business is that as the business levels up, you have to level up. And as you level up, the business
levels up. Level up.
When you're on the book field, right? The book field pushes you, right? Either it's going to crush you and deal with your stuff, or you're going to proactively deal with your stuff. And for me, that's the best and worst part of running my own business. And that's true whether you have 5 employees or 5,000, like your leadership team has to continue to grow. You have to, it's the inner game, not the outer game. It's not that they don't know the technical stuff to do. It's that there's too much dysfunction. They can't execute the way they need to as individuals or as a team.
But John Maxwell, okay, go ahead.
Well, I want to speak to Andres real quick. And I agree, Alicia, for sure with you. So the idea of Tony Robbins, because I think I want to defend him on this, because I think there's a couple things here. There's the action and you have to have the belief. I've personally never been to a Tony Robbins seminar. I've heard good things, you know, walk on coals, all that fun stuff. Lee obviously can speak to this. But the one thing that I think that he does a really good job in instilling in people is the belief side of it, and just having like a crazy ass amount of confidence in, this is what I'm doing and this is where I'm going. Yes, Andres, you still have to take action on that. That doesn't mean like, hey, here's your beautiful game plan on what you're going to do whenever you leave this conference. Like you still have to create that and do that. But there are some people that are lacking in that belief, and you have to have the craziest belief in what you're doing. Otherwise, none of this matters. If you don't believe in yourself and like where you're going, and sure, it's going to ebb and flow, but you have to believe in like, I'm selling this because I actually like it, or because I think it's good, or I believe in myself as being a realtor.
Okay.
Alicia, I love your crunched face here. What do you disagree with?
I disagree.
Pat is writing weird things in the comments that don't make any sense. So if he could just explain who Benny is. That wasn't even for you, Will. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I do disagree, but that's what
Benny Hinn is like. Hinn.
He can heal people. They fall over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's one of these pastors that gets all these crippled people up on the stage and heals them in the name of Jesus. And they sometimes walk off the stage and sometimes don't. But it goes to this belief thing. Like what Will was describing as it went through my filter was, you know, he believes in this stuff so much that he can empower other people. And I'm like, well, like maybe Benny Hinn can believe it so much that he can get somebody to stand up out of a wheelchair and walk across a stage. I don't know. But it also could be that they're both selling a little snake oil.
All you want, if your business model sucks, you're still screwed.
Well, there's,
I don't think that's a one shot. I think it's a whole different topic. Motivational speakers, right? Like how we do all of that stuff.
All the topics is
in his defense, I'll go with Will here, having gone to a one-day seminar and not walking on hot coals. I got more out of that one day in terms of material for Sunday meetings, for sales school. It completely changed sales school when I ran it for 20 years. And if you'd seen the old sales school versus the new sales school, a lot of it was Robin's material, because it was NLP. It was neuro-linguistic programming. And, you know, you can go study that. That's a science. So, but he's cheesy and he's 6'8 and whatever. But he does have some good material. A book that changed my thinking entirely was Awaken the Giant Within. Yes, Will, it's an old book. It was written in the 80s. But Tony, it was
1880s.
It just mapped out how your mind works and how you can change. You know, it wasn't just an attitude or a pump up book at all. It was how your brain works.
But here's where I have the problem with that. So like you would be one of the people that took that. And then that legacy of Tony Robbins has impacted sales school, which means that in turn has impacted thousands of people since then. No question on that. Yep. But my problem is that like, the other 999 people that went to that same conference probably didn't go back to sales school and change whatever. Because if they had, you only like the way that spread of information or virality works, in my experience, trying to go viral with this show, is it just really only takes like 50 people to start sharing what you're talking about. Jesus needed 12 to bring it back to Lee terms, right? You needed 12, and that's all you needed. Okay. And if the message was good enough, really that good, 12 people is all you need. So then that all of humanity counts the years in unison based on that one religion, right? That's how big of the impact it was of those 12 people is we're all going, it's 2023. There's Muslims that say it's 2023. In China, it's like the year of the dragon or whatever. But for the most part, you fill your IRS form with 2023. That's the impact that 12 people had. If his message was that good, then all of the people would have changed the world by now is what I think. Also, too, you're charging you don't need more money, dude. Just give it away for free, which sales school was free. And that's his business model. All that to say, okay, Pat's disagreeing.
All I'm trying to say is this.
Look, here's my final thought is there's belief that you need, but you don't need it from Tony Robbins. Sometimes you need it for yourself. And if you're willing to pay $50,000 to pay for Tony Robbins, you should be willing to pay for your own damn business and use that $50,000 capital to start a business is so much that you could do with. And you can do it on your own. Pay for coaching and it'll get you more out of it.
So bitter.
That's a great opinion.
Now, Pat, I am not as liberal as you think I am. Now, listen.
I don't care.
This is liberal.
I don't care.
Here's what I'm going to close with. Is there's a part of, as I was saying, some of it is belief, some of it is action, some of it is good planning, right? Strategy, good business plan, and a good idea. Those are like pretty much like the four things. And really, you could make it work, a right team and all that stuff, culture and all that. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I think understanding the impact that you are going to have and how you're going to be different, I think is more important than try to make it like everyone else, which is what Alicia was saying, which is the only point I was trying to make with this, is everybody goes to Tony Robbins to be like Tony Robbins. No, you be the next Tony Robbins and do it on your own is all I was trying to say, because you don't need that.
Yeah.
He didn't have a Tony Robbins, right? And so...
Yes, he did.
Absolutely he did.
No, he not as big as he is now.
Andres, I think of Tony Robbins, like different people have different kinds of success types, like a blood type. And if Tony Robbins has your exact same, if you're that exact same success type,
yeah,
his stuff is going to resonate really deeply. It'll make a huge difference. You should go to all the stuff you can get, because that will help. And if it doesn't, there'll be grades of like less than, right? But the truth is, it's not a linear effect. It's a quantum effect. So you might read one sentence out of one thing, or something that Lee McCroskey said from stage 20 years ago is the reason that I have this perspective. You can't trace all that stuff. And it's just a little weird that you're so mad at him. Seriously.
Yeah. What happened?
I like that. I like the anger.
You should get him on a podcast.
Wow. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Are you Quentin today? Somebody had to be.
I just have a hard time believing in the mumbo jumbo that people say sometimes. Some of the things he says, I'm like, well, oh my God.
Okay, here's what happened.
Books are dumb. We should write books to try to help people. That's crazy. Why would we do that? Who reads all the books?
All the books on success have been written. There's just not enough readers, I think.
Just so you know, in the 80s, there was a mathematician and a psychologist that studied people who had psychological issues. Bander and Grinder, and they created neuro-linguistic programming. It got a lot of play, and it's a weird science, and you should study it. And I went to seminars pre Tony Robbins. All Tony Robbins did was he took neuro-linguistic programming, renamed it to neuro-associational psychology, and then got on stage and started, you know, pumping his fist and stuff. So he made it, he took something that was not mainstream, but scientifically accurate, and mainstreamed it. Now, where he went from there, I would agree with what some of the stuff he said, Andres, but there is a science behind what he does. That's why I adopted it, not because I was like, yeah, walk on coals.
And I think he's great. His stuff is good. I'm just saying, not everybody needs it.
I don't believe that. I don't believe what you just said. It's the first inauthentic thing you've said this whole show.
That's not true. No.
He's great.
Because I can't discredit.
What's the opposite?
I can't.
I think he's great.
Like a buzz. Yeah. I can't discredit what he's done. I'm not trying to, or the people that have gotten, like Lee, for example. He's a classic example of why his stuff is good. I know it's time to go, but I just don't think that it's as for everybody. You know?
Yeah. Just like Southwestern isn't for everybody.
Okay. Just like this podcast isn't for everyone.
Correct.
Southwestern just is like for Nebraska. Everyone. You're lying.
Just like Nebraska.
Everybody gets the full bag. Everybody. That's the rule.
Nebraska like is only for Nebraska. People that are from Nebraska.
Hey, everybody's getting it. So, hey.
Everybody's getting it.
All right. Anybody have closing thoughts? Are we...
I think that's a great, just like Nebraska. That's a perfect closing thought.
You're welcome.
Thank you for letting me be heated.
It was in my notes before the show started.